We begin the current daven Saktiskubis daf nun ches. We begin the four lines down from the Tam of the Yomid, where the Gemara continues explaining our Mishnah. And that is, the Mishnah said what was called the Mishnah Rishayna, the original version of the Mishnah said that from the time that a chassan that's engaged to his kala petitions her to say, okay, you're ready to get married, she gets 12 months. If the 12 month deadline comes and they're still not married because he's holding it up for some reason, then halacha is that she really starts getting fed from his estate. And even if he's a kohen, as we explained in the previous daf, which biblically she's allowed to eat even when she's engaged, but rabbinically she cannot eat until they get married. However, once the 12-month deadline comes, then she eats. He has to feed her, and moreover, if he's a kohen, he even feeds her truma. Now, regarding that, there was a machlokes in the Mishnah that Reb Tarfon said, "Noisn lo hakol truma b'chul." He gives her everything that he has to feed her, where he has the obligation now of every husband that has to wife. If the time for the nisuin came about and they delayed it for whatever reason, then he has to give her whatever her husband has to feed her. But he could give it all of that truma. Now, although a woman, parts of the month is going to be tameh, and then she cannot consume truma, but then she takes whatever that is and sells that truma, and then she purchases with that chulin. Whereas Rabbi Akiva said that no, that half of it is truma, but half has to be chulin that she could utilize in the days that when she's tameh. Now, on that, Abai qualifies this machlekes, and he says, the whole machlekes between Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva was machlekes bebas koyin lekoyin. When you have a daughter of a koyin who's engaged to a koyin, again, it's after the 12-month deadline. Now, the reason being is because a daughter of a koyin, she's proficient, she really knows to be careful with halachas of truma, and she knows that when she's going to be tummy, she's going to be in need, that she's going to sell it to buy chulin with it. So there is where Reb Tarfon would say, okay, you could give her the entire thing of truma. But when it's a daughter of a non-Kohen who's engaged to a Kohen, where a regular non-Kohenis, a daughter of Yisrael, is not so proficient, doesn't know well the halachas of Truma. So there, Abaye says, everyone would agree, even Reb Tarfon, the Mechze Chulin, the Mechze Truma, that you have to give half of it at least of Chulin, because again, she's not going to be so aware and be so careful as is necessary in halachas of Truma. Moreover, Vama by another qualification of this machlekes. It says, machlekes ba'arusa. The whole machlekes was, as we mentioned, it's in reference to a bas kohen, is only that she's engaged. Now, the reason being is because, so she's engaged, and it's just that the 12-month deadline came, so he's obligated, but she's not with him yet in this house, so she's still in her father's house. Now, since she's still in her father's house, and remember, she's a bas kohen, her father's a kohen, her whole family's, all the men are kahanim, so her father, so when she becomes tameh, he'll go through the extra effort of selling off her truma that she could consume when she's tameh, because that's what he always does. Because people in the family become tameh, the women become tameh, and they can't eat the truma. So he's used to this already, this procedure, and therefore he'll do it for his daughter who's engaged to sell off her truma that she's getting from her chassan. Ave ben nisua. But if she's married already, where her husband gives her, as every husband gives to his wife, food in his house. For example, if let's say it's in her house, which would be if he sends through a third party that goes ahead and he sends the food to her, as the Mishnah later on teaches in Av Samech Dalma Beis, in such a case where she's married but she's in her own house, then the Riha Kol, then Abai says, everyone would agree, even Reb Tarfon, the Mechze Chulin or Mechze Truma, that at least half it has to be Chulin. The reason being is because the pasuk says Kol Kvudei Bas Melech Panima. The entire dignity of a Jewish woman, of a princess, is to stay indoors, not to have to go outside and be busy in the marketplace selling. And that applies to every Jewish woman. Now, when she's married already, she's not by her brothers and her father anymore, that they could be involved and do what she needs to do, because they go to the marketplace to sell it for the days of Tuma, and and her husband's not doing it either because she's in her own house. So because of that situation, that even Reb Tarfon would agree that he has to give her then at least Mechze Chulin. So again, according to Abaya, the machlekes of Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva only applies by a bas kohen who's engaged to a kohen, and moreover, it's only when she's engaged and she's still at home with her father, and not when she's married and then in her own house. So the Gemara time, Tanam similar to the Braisa, like Abaya had qualified, that quotes this machlekes. Reb Tarfon, he said, Noisn la hakoil truma. He says that you give her the entire thing as truma. Reb Kiva Imer, he says, no, mechze chulin and mechze truma. That has to be half, at least, of chulin. As we said this in the Mishnah. Now, the Bamed Vamrum, now, the Breitzer qualifies this machlekes. When did we say that they argue that's bebas koin lekoin? Aber Babas Yisrael, if she's a daughter of a Yisrael, everyone agrees, at least half has to be chulin, because again, she's not so bucky in the halachas of truma, and she won't be careful. Moreover, b'medvamrum, the Brisa qualifies again. It's talking about Barusa that they were arguing about. When she's married, everyone would agree, even Reb Tarfon, that it would have to be at least half v'tchulin, because now that she's on her own, she doesn't have any men to go ahead and go to the marketplace for her, and she's going to have to go by herself. That's not appropriate, because kol kvud bas melech panima. Now, those are the two tanoim that we knew of in our Mishnah. But the Brisa quotes other tanoim that argue, and they have different opinions. He says, he says that for every two parts of truma, you give one part of chulm. That's the ratio he gives for what one gives to this type of a woman. Rabbi Hudaimer, a fourth opinion, he says, no, all of it that you give her, that you have to feed her now that the 12-month deadline had come, is truma. Then what she does is, but she sells it obviously at the times of the month when she's tamei, and with that she purchases chulin produce that she could eat. Now, Rashi obviously addresses the question of that Rabbi Huda seems to be the same thing as the first opinion of Reb Tarfon. So Rashi says, no, that there is a difference between them. And that's obvious from the extra words that Rabbi Huda ends off the sentence with. Because whereas by Reb Tarfon, that he holds that he gives the woman truma that's according to how much she has to be fed, now, that's in spite of the fact that there are going to be times in the month when she's going to have to sell the truma because she's going to need to have chulin. And the value of truma in the market, it does not fetch as much as chulin does. The reason being is because chulin is more expensive than truma because everybody wants that, because everyone could consume chulin. But there's a much lower demand for truma because only Kohanim could eat that. So according to Reb Tarfon, she's essentially going to be at a loss because although she's getting the amount of money that could feed her, but it's not going to cover because she's going to have to sell that truma, and then that's not going to cover what she needs of chulin. Whereas according to Reb Yehuda, he gives her the appropriate amount of truma, which is that if she has to sell half to get chulin, that she will not have less than the value of what chulin has to be. In other words, he doesn't just give her the amount of truma that would cover if she was eating all the truma. He gives her that amount of truma, which when she sells that amount for half, let's say, in the month, where then she'll have to cover the amount of chulin that necessary for her to eat. However, the one thing that Rabbi Huda is requiring is the effort, the exertion of having to sell the truma and then to get the chulin. So although Rabbi Kiva said that you get mechza chulin, mechza truma, and then Rabbi Huda says no, you get the only thing he has to give her is truma, and she has to go through the effort of selling it. But it's not like Rabbi Tarfon who said that you're going to obviously add a loss because truma is a much lower price. No, you get more truma that when you sell that, you'll have the amount of mechza chulin. The Brisa then quotes a fifth opinion. He says, kamakim shehusker truma, wherever it is that truma is mentioned, in other words, that you're giving truma, then you have to give double the amount which would be the equivalent in chulin. In other words, if one has to feed his wife a certain amount of food, so then if he's giving her truma, then he has to give her double the amount, because then that will be the equivalent of what would be in chulin. Now, what Reb Shimon Gamliel holds is that we don't want them to have to go through the effort of selling the truma. And rather, he has to give her a lot of truma, so that when she charges for a very cheap price, so they're going to be people buying it right away. It's not such a major effort. That's what he's saying, that he gives a kaflaim b'chulin, double the amount of that a husband normally gives when it's chulin, so that she'll be very easily able to sell it, and then she'll be able to get her chulin for the half of the month that she needs it. But now the Gemara asks, so my benayu, what essentially is the difference between the last two opinions mentioned, the brisa between Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon, where it sounds like both of them are essentially saying the same thing, that she has to sell the truma, she's only getting truma, but when she sells it, she'll be able to sell it and still have enough of chulin, not like Reb Tarfon, who also said hakol truma, but you're going to be at a loss because you're only getting that amount of food, and when you sell truma, it's a much cheaper price than chulin. But both of them are essentially saying the same thing. And the Gemara says, no, ikir b'nayu tirch, the difference between them is regarding exerting oneself. And that is, Pshim Gamliel says, she's not going to have any difficulty getting chulin because she has double the amount of truma than chulin, so she could easily sell of half selling off the truma and getting enough for chulin. Whereas according to Rabbi Huda, you're gonna have to, we're not giving you double, we're giving you a little bit more so that you're gonna have to really handle and wheel and deal, but at the end of the day, you'll be able to sell the truma and have enough for chulin, but it's gonna be an effort on one's part. That's the difference between Rabbi Huda's opinion and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion. Now the Gemara continues, quoting from our Mishnah that continued on a related halacha, that hayavam einam eichel b'truma, although a woman, let's say when she's already 12 months and the deadline has come and she's not even married, she gets truma ready from her chasan, but a yavam, who she's also anticipating consummating that relationship, einam eichel b'truma, he doesn't feed her truma. So the Gemara's my time, what's the reason? So the Gemara says, and this would be even likely after a 12-month wait, so the Gemara says, because kinyan kaspe amrachman, the Torah says that regarding a kohen being able to feed his avadim, his isha, that it says because they are an acquisition of his money. And in halacha, a woman is acquired by receiving some type of a money or a ring from the husband to become his kala. Now, v'hai kinyan de'achavu, but it has to be kinyan kaspe, acquisition of his money. But by yavam, he's not really acquiring her. It's the acquisition of his brother, who then he takes over that relationship when he dies without any children. And therefore, that will not qualify for kinyan kaspay. Now, that when his brother died, his brother's kinyan was removed, and he doesn't have that yet, so therefore, he cannot feed her. But Rashi obviously points out, when the yavam actually does yibam, and then takes her in marriage, then she becomes like a regular wife. Moreover, Rashi says that the pasuk calls the Yavama, who after consummating the relationship with the Yavam, is called his wife, as it says in Dvarim Chafei, Ulekachalei Leisha, that he should take her for a wife, where he acquires her with the Bia of Yibam. Now, just like a Kedushin of Bia feeds an Arusa, where, as the Gemara previously had learned from, we compare all the Havayis, we compare Kesar Shtar and Bia to each other, and one of them teaches us that there's going to be the feeding of an arusa, so too for Bia, so too we learn for regarding the Yavama. When the Yavam does Bia in the Yavama, she becomes no less, she's being called an Isha, and no less than an arusa, who when has Kedushi Bia, already can eat Truma. So although Kinyan Kaspa he doesn't have, but he has it when he does his own Kinyan Kaspa, when she becomes his own wife through Bia. Now the Mishnah said that it's so far that the woman does not eat truma because of the yavam, that even if asas hashish chadash mefnei abal, even if, let's say, she was engaged, she's waiting for the 12-month deadline to have her chasna, and for 6 months she's waiting, then her husband died, then she spends 6 months waiting for her yavam to do yibam. So although it's 12 months already, but since part of the time was in front of the yavam, then she's not going to eat truma yet. Moreover, it even said that if she spends almost the entire 12 months besides one day in front of her husband, then her husband dies, her chasan, and then she's waiting for the yavam, one day, it's already 12 months, it's not going to work. It's not all 12 months in front of the chasan. Then the Mishnah said, if it's all, basically almost all the 12 months was in front of the yavam, and only one day was for her chasan, meaning her chasan died the day after they got engaged, that's also not going to be valid. So the Gemara asks, hash de bevnei habal, if we said that if she spends almost the entire 12 months waiting for her chasan, she's almost by the 12-month deadline that she's going to get married. Besides one day, Amrit lo, you said that no, she cannot eat truma because not all 12 months was in front of the chasan. One day was in front of the yavam. So if so, if all of it is bifnei hayavam, if all of it was basically almost entirety was in front of the yavam, where if based on the yavam, he doesn't have her feed because, as we just explained, because she's not kinyan kasbay, so mibaya, did the Mishnah have to tell us that she's not going to eat? In other words, especially since that's quoted after the halacha, it first quotes the halacha that almost all 12 months was in front of her husband, but one day yavam, no, it's not going to work. And then it says, and if almost all 12 months were in front of the yavam and one day by the husband, then not. That, of course, is not, because the yavam doesn't feed and he's actually the problem over here for her being able to eat. So for sure, if almost all of it was by the yavam, what's the chiddush? So the Gemara answers, you're right, it's what's called zu ve'in tzarech lemezuktani. Sometimes the Mishnah says it in the way of like, this is the halacha, that if almost all of it was by the husband, but one day not, it's not going to work. And for sure, we don't have to tell you, that's what's called ve'in tzarech lemezuktani. And definitely, we don't have to tell you, don't make this error, for sure we don't have to tell you that if almost all of it was under the yavam, that for sure it's not going to work. Again, yes, because for sure, if the yavam is the problem, if almost all of it was by him, then that's not going to work. Now, the Mishnah said that this whole halacha that was being discussed of Igiya Zman Vele Nisu, that if it reached the 12-month deadline and they didn't get married, then she eats from his estate, and if he's a kohen, he feeds her truma. So the Mishnah then said that Zu Mishnah Rishayna, that's the original version of the Mishnayis, which held that this was the halacha, that then she eats truma after the 12-month deadline. But then the Mishnah said, but the Bezna Achrayna, the later Bezdin, came along and said that, no, she doesn't eat truma until she comes into the chuppah. So the Gemara asked, my time, what's the reason of the Mishnah Achrayna that changed it from the 12-month deadline to say, no, if she didn't have chuppah yet, she can't eat truma even if it's after 12 months? So Amma Ula says, Vitam, and some say, and this is going to be important, who's the one that's saying this statement, that it was Rav Shmuel by Yehuda, that's Mishum Simpoin. It's because of, as we explained in the previous stuff, the Simpoin means to say that he might find some blemish with her, and he's not going to be, he's going to say this is not the type of woman I wanted to marry. It's going to be a Mekech Tois. And if she was eating Truma before Chuppah, by Chuppah already, he's already intimate with her. So he already sees everything about her. But before that, even after the 12 months, where he wasn't fully aware of all her movement, all her blemishes, so then it's going to come out, if she's eating truma retroactively, that she was a non-kohanis, because she's not, retroactively, she was not married, and that's an isser for a zara to eat truma, so therefore we don't let her eat truma according to the Mishnah Achrayna until after chuppah. Now that the Gemara asks. These two versions of who said this statement are actually the two opinions that argue regarding the interpretation of what was the Mishnah Rishayna's understanding of why after 12 months you have to wait, and that the arusa cannot eat when a regular arusa, because biblically a regular arusa could eat truma. It's just that the Mishnah Rishayna held, we don't let you until after 12 months. So now the Gemara asks, Bishleim l'ula, we could understand that if it was Ula that just said this last statement that we said, because Kamaisa, he interprets the Mishnah Rishayna that said it's forbidden from the moment she becomes engaged to eat truma, although the Torah permits her. And the Rabbanan made a gzeira until it's Higiyah's month, until it's 12 months, is because they weren't concerned about Simfine. Rather, Shema Yimzugula Kais Bevesavi, as Ula had interpreted, because their concern that if she's going to be engaged and she's in her father's house, if the Kain who she's engaged to is allowed to give her Truma, then she's going to be home and everyone's going to be like, oh, what's this that you got from your chasen? Oh, can we drink this? Can we have this? And that's going to be a problem, because although she has Alochas Kinin Kas, but they don't, and they're going to be Zorim consuming Truma. But however, as we explained the previous staff, however, when the 12 months already come and he's obligated in feeding her, then he already gives her a separate place to stay because he doesn't want her giving everything away because he has to feed her. And therefore, there's no concern that she's going to give them to drink. Therefore, that's why they permitted it after the 12-month deadline. Whereas Ubasraisa, but obviously, as Ula is saying, but the Mishnah Achrayna held that, no, they decreed that she cannot have Truma until after she enters into Chuppah. Because they were concerned, the later Bez were concerned, Mishnah Simfoin. They were concerned for that reason. That reason would apply even after the 12-month deadline, because although she's eating in her own place, but she's never with him yet, with Chuppah, and being intimate with him, so therefore he's still not aware, and there still might be a Mekach Tois, so they said, until Chuppah. Now, however, Gatim Talmud Bez, Elul Rav Shmuel by Yehuda, but according to Rav Shmuel by Yehuda, who explained previously that even the reason of Kamaisa, of the first one, meaning of the Mishnah Rishayna, he explained his Mishum Simfine, that he said the reason why the Mishnah Rishayna held that an Arusa cannot eat until it's a Giyaz Man is because of this reason that he might find a blemish in her. Now the problem is Ubas Reis. Now if this was Rav Shmuel by Yehuda saying that now the Bezna Achrayna, that they're saying the reason is also Mishum Simfine, so then my Benayu. So what's the difference between them? In other words, why did the Mishnah Rishayna see fit that once the Sigiyah's man, the 12-month deadline came, then she's permitted, and then there's no concern of the Simfine. But then why did the Bezna Achrayna come along and say that, no, there is a concern of the Simfine until she enters into the Chuppah? Which one is it? When is a man confident that he already knows all about her, that he's not going to find any blemishes, and then make it a Mekach Tois L'Mafreya, and that a problem of a non-Kohen is eating Truma? So Gemara explains, Ege Benayu B'dikas Chutz. The difference between the Mishnah Rishayna and the Bezdin Shalachareim was regarding an external inspection of the Kala. And that is Mar Sava, the Mishnah Rishayna held, Bedikas Chutz, an external inspection, meaning when he has his relatives go check her out and go see different things about her and they investigated it, that was Shema Bedika. They held that that's considered a valid inspection. And therefore, before he's going to go ahead and spend money on her, which is when the 12-month deadline comes around, he's going to have to start feeding her and shelling out money, he's for sure going to have his relatives check her out, although he's not intimate with her, but the time already reached, he's going to have to spend money on her. So therefore, we're not concerned with Simfon anymore. So therefore, she could eat, because if he's already spending money, which only starts after the 12-month deadline, so then he would have checked her out. And that's valid for to be confident that there's nothing that's really bad about her. But Amar Sav, however, the Bezin Shal Chareim, the later Bezin held, Bedikas Chotz, Loishma Bedika. An external checking out by his relatives and his sister, and everyone's looking at her and making sure she's okay, that's not a valid investigation. Until he's secluded with her and intimate with her, and then he checks her out, then he might find something that they didn't find, and he's going to know, and it's going to bother him, and that's going to be Mekach Toys. So therefore they said that no. Even if it's after the 12-month deadline, until it's Chuppah and they're having Gichud, only then can she start eating Truma. Because before that, there is going to be a concern with Simfon. So according to Shmuel Behuda, both were concerned with Simfon. The only thing is, when do we stop being concerned with Simfon? Is it even after the 12-month deadline, or is it only when she's Tekanes L'Chuppah? Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, continuing on the relationship between the husband and wife and their different obligations. So the Mishnah says, Hamakdish Maisi De Ishtai. If someone says that the wife's earnings, which the Mishnah later on of Samach Dalam and Beis will teach us that there are certain obligations of a wife's earnings, which is a set amount of Chamish Shlam worth of income, where it's designated for her husband. So if the husband says, your earnings are going to Hashem, I mean, makdashit, it's sanctified. Now, the halacha is, harezu isa vaychel, that in actuality, she, isa, meaning she earns money, and she consumes that money. In other words, her ma'isi daim, her income, does not become hektish based on his words, which Gemara will explain the reasoning for that, and therefore it's not hektish. Now, however, ha-maiser, the excess, if the husband sanctifies the excess of his wife's income, meaning if she makes more than this 5 shlam worth, in other words, there's, as we're going to see in the Gemara, there's two variables in this relationship of the husband's obligation and the wife's obligation. The husband has to feed his wife, and there's also another obligation that of this extra sela that he gives her for all her other needs. Then the wife has another obligation back to the husband, correlating to that, which is her income goes to him, and then even her meiser, the excess of her income, meaning that when she passes the minimum of these 5 shlam, that has to go to the husband. Now, so although the Mishnah said that her basic income, that if he's makdish, does not become hektish, and she gets to take that income and support herself with that, however, regarding the meiser, the excess, what she makes more than what the Chum have said that is considered her ma'isdam that then goes to the husband in place of what he feeds her, is and is, that's the case that we're talking about. When he sanctifies the ma'isa, the excess, but not her principal, her basic income. Now, as Rashi explains that the ma'isa, the excess, is acquired to the husband because of this ma' kesef, that the Chum were misakin, that every single week, every single Shabbos, the husband has to give her a ma kesef for her needs, besides the mezonos that he gives her, as is taught later on in that Mishnah. So, regarding this case, there's a machlekes. Remeo im hektish, which the Gemara is going to explain the reason of this machlekes. He says that it is hektish. So, although by ma'is yadayim, when he says that her basic amount is hektish, that's not going to be hektish, and she's isa vaychelas. However, by the ma'is of the excess, the Remeir says it is hektish, and Rabbi Yochanan Sandlo Eimer Chulni says no, that there also it's not going to be hektish, rather it's going to be chul. So now the Gemara brings the following halacha, which is going to be related to the halacha of our Mishnah. Amar Vunam Rav. He says, Yechayle Isha Leim Lebala. A woman could tell her husband, look, Eini Noizenis, I'm not going to get fed from you, you don't have to support me, but Ve'eini Oisa. My income is not going to go to you, rather it's going to stay by me. Now, so although that we said that that's the correlating obligations where the husband has to feed the wife and in return the wife has to give her earnings to the husband, she has the rights, according to Rav Huna, that to say, look, don't feed me, don't support me, and my earnings don't go to you. Now, that the Gemara says, so obviously, ksaba that Rav Huna holds, kita kin rabbanon, when the rabbanon were mesaka, in other words, the inception of the takana de rabbanon, which was made in these correlating obligations was for her benefit, because many times the woman will not earn enough to support herself. So therefore, the initial takana institution was that mizoyni ikar. The primary was our concern that the wife should be fed. Now, post that, they then reciprocated a takana that umaisi del, that her earnings should go to her husband, mishum eva, because of enmity, because he's saying, well, I'm supporting her, and she's earning money, and she's keeping that for herself. That's not fair. So to avoid that type of fight, we said, okay, he has to support her, but then she has to go ahead and her earnings go to him. Now, but since the primary takana was for her benefit, and it's going to her, so v'chi amra einin nizens v'einaisis, so when she says, look, I don't need this takana, I'm not going to get supported, but I don't want my earnings to go to him, I don't want this benefit, then that's volition is hers. She can go ahead and do that, because the whole reason why we made this reciprocating obligation was for her. She says, I don't need it. So fine, she could hold on to her earnings and not take his support. That's what Rav Huna said in the name of Rav. Now that the Gemara asked, Meis, we learned a brisa that says, Tiknu Mezainis, that they instituted the wife getting fed, Tachas Maisi Adeha, in place, meaning to reciprocate, because that her earnings go to her husband. Now that makes it sound like that the primary is that her earnings go to her husband. Now because her earnings go to her husband, well, that's not fair. So because of that, the husband has to support her. But according to Rav Huna Merav, it's the other way around. Because if it was that way around, she wouldn't be able to say, because that's her obligation. So the Gemara says, Ema, say that, according to Rav Huna, you have to amend that braisa, that it's tiknu maisi deh tachas mezainis, that no, that they instituted the reciprocating of her earnings going to the husband, because that there's mezainis that the husband has to feed her. But that's the primary, and therefore she could say, look, I don't want to be fed, and I'm not, my earnings don't go to you. So the Gemara says, Le Misayele, let's say that our Mishnah supports this halacha of Rav Huna. Because our Mishnah says, Hamakdish maisi de ishtay. If a husband sanctifies his wife's earnings, so the halacha of the Mishnah said was, Harehi oisa v'aichelas. No, she could earn the money, and she could consume that. It's not hektish. So the Gemara says, my love ben Zainis, isn't it talking about that the husband has assets and he wants to support her? So he's saying, look, I want to support you, so that means your earnings go to me, and then I could be makdish, your ma'isi daim. That's what it would sound like, it would be the chiddush of what the Mishnah is coming to say. And in spite of that, the Mishnah tells us that no, her earnings are not in his domain to be makdish it. You're right. If I get supported by you, then you'll get it, and then you can do whatever you want with it. But to be makdish my ma'isi daim, no. Although you want to support me, I don't have to take your support. I can say, I'm going to earn my money, I'm going to take it myself. And that seems to be inherent in the chiddush of the Mishnah. And I think Mara says, like, no. It's talking about Bisha Ein in his end, there's no right to Rav Huna. The Mishnah is talking about where the husband has no money to support her. And therefore, since he's not supporting her, so then her ma'isi daim don't go to him, and that's why it's not hektish. But that the Gemara asks, Ibish in his end, if it's talking about that he's not feeding her, well, my lamembra. Then what is the chiddush? Why do we have to say that her maisi daim is not in his reshus and therefore it's not going to be hektish? Of course not. Because afil lamandam, even according to the pin that says, which actually is a machloik, is a mesechtes gittin. So even according to the pin that says that yochla rav loyme le'evit, that a master could tell his slave, asay imi vein izanach, work for me and still I'm not going to support you. That one opinion was only said by a non-Jewish slave. The like siv be'imach, the pasuk doesn't say that he's with you. Aval eved every dich siv be'imach, but regarding a Jewish slave, that the Torah says that he's with you, which means to say that you have to take care of him. Then loy, even that opinion holds that you cannot tell him, work for me and I'm not going to support you. So bekoshke and ishtar, oh, the more so one's wife, you can't tell her, look, I'm not supporting you, but your earnings are going to go to me. Of course her earnings will not go to you. So what's the chiddush in saying that if you're makdish or ma'isa daim and you're not feeding her, that it's not hektish? Of course not. Because obviously it's the wife's, because even the eved ivri, you can't do that to such a person. So how can you say that the Mishnah is talking about in the case of ein nezenis, and that's how you're refuting the raya of Rav Huna? So I think Mar says, no, that doesn't refute the refutation, meaning it's obviously, it doesn't have to be a raya like Rav Huna, because you're right, the reisha is very pashtut, that obviously cannot be makdish. But it's sefer istrachle. It's the end of the Mishnah that was necessary to teach us the machloikis regarding meiser, regarding when there's the excess, where that's not applicable to him feeding her. As we said, that even if he's not feeding her, as these opinions who are refuting the raya of Rav Huna are saying, he's not feeding her, still there's an opinion that says that her excess will be kaddish, will become sanctified after she dies and he inherits her, as the Gemara later on will explain. So it's regarding that, that Remeya Oimer Hekdish, Remeya says it's still going to be Hekdish, even though he's not feeding her. And still, if he's Makdish, her excess of Maaseh Daim, it's going to be Kaddish. And Rabbi Yochanan san lo Oimer Chulin, Rabbi Yochanan san says Chulin. So it's for that Machlaikis that we quoted this halacha. So you're right, the Reish is not a Chiddush, that when he's Makdish it. But we only use that as a stepping stone for the Sefer to say, however, even in the same case as the Reisha, when Einan is Enes, when he's not feeding her, still if he's Makdish her Meiser, that will become Hekdish according to Reb Meir. But one thing is that there's no right to Rav Huna from the Mishnah. Now the Gemara says, however, that Upliga, that this halacha of Rav Huna argues on the Resh Lakish. On Resh Lakish. Because the Amar Shlakish, Resh Lakish said, meaning this halacha of Rav Huna, that the woman has the option of opting out. She can say, no, Einan is Enes, V'Einan Oisa. Resh Lakish obviously argues on that, because the Amar Shlakish says, Loi Tema Taimed Reb Meir. He qualifies Reb Meir's halacha in the Mishnah, and he says that don't say this, that Reb Meir says that when the husband is makdish, the meiser, the excess, is going to be kaddish. Don't say that the reason of Reb Meir is Mishum Diksaver Adam Makdish Davar Shloim Bal Oilim. Don't say it's because Reb Meir holds that a person can sanctify something that's not extant yet in the world. For example, like her earnings, where he's obviously sanctifying it before that she earned it, because once she earns it, it's his, or not his, but whichever way it is. This that he's makdish it, that it's not even here yet. So he says, don't learn it, that Reb Meir, that the reasoning that it's obvious of how Reb Meir says it's kaddish is because you can sanctify somebody that's not in the world yet. He says, no, it's not necessarily that would be the reason of why Reb Meir would consider it kaddish. At the time of the Reb Meir, rather, the reason Reb Meir could be is mitoch sheyoch lekayif lemaaseh deo, since he could force his wife to give him her earnings. So nasa ko'imala, so it says if he's telling her, and it's the equivalent halacha that yikachu yedecha lo'isam, that I want your hands to be sanctified to the one who created them, meaning that which ultimately what that means is that your earnings, which are coming about through your hands, which is called your handiwork, is going to go to who made the hands, which is Hashem. That's what how he's being makdish it. Now, hands are in the world, and therefore, since they're in the world, so that's how he holds that you can be makdish the meiser. But not because necessarily because you could be makdish dovish leibel oilam. Maybe you cannot, but here it's considered bal oilam because he'd be makdish the woman's hands. Now, but one thing we see from Resh Lakish, the way he's interpreting Reb Meir, is that obviously he holds that a husband could force the wife to give him her earnings, and she cannot say Einan is Enes v'Einan Oisa. And therefore, from Resh Lakish's interpretation of Reb Meir, you see that he argues in Halacha Rav Huna, and that's why he considers it Bala Olam, because he has control over her hands. According to Rav Huna, she doesn't have control over her hands. She could say Einan is Enes v'Einan Oisa. So obviously this machlokes between Rav Huna and Resh Lakish, if a woman has the option of opting out and saying, no, I'm not giving you my earnings and I'm not going to get fed from you. Now, however, the Gemara asks on this interpretation of Resh Lakish in Reb Meir's opinion to Mishnah, that because he could force her, so it's as if he said, I'm being makdish to your dayim, but the Gemara says, but that's not what he said. He didn't say, I'm sanctifying your hands, which is Bala Olam. He said, I'm sanctifying your Maaseh Daim, your handy work. So that's not Bala Olam. So how could he say it's as if it's Bala Olam? So the Gemara explains, it's Reb Meir l'shitasai, which is Kivin Shamin l'Reb Meir Dama, since we know that Reb Meir elsewhere says in Masechta Seirich and Afheim and Aleph, that Ein Oda Maitzi Devar V'Levatala, a person does not say words in vain. Where the Mishnah there in Masechta Seirich explains, if someone says, I want to give the Eirich value of a child younger than a month old. So the halacha of Eirichim, which is explicit in the Torah, there are set values for male and female regarding different ages, that only starts from over a month. So Reb Meir says, if someone says, I'm going to give the Eirich of someone less than a month, then you have to give the other halacha, not an Eirich, but rather what's called damim, which is the monetary value, not the Torah value of Eirichim, but the monetary value, how such a person would be sold in the marketplace. Now, why do you have to give dam of if you said erich? Because Reb Meir says a person knows there's no erich for a child less than a month. And he intended to really do it for damim purposes. It's just that he said the word of erich, and therefore you have to give the damim. Now, David the Gemara says here also, a person knows that you cannot be makdish davar shelo olam. You cannot sanctify something that didn't come to the world. At least that's Rish Lakish's supposition of Reb Meir's opinion. But however, so if a person knows you cannot be makdish davar shelo olam, something that didn't come to the world yet, so what's he saying when I'm sanctifying your handiwork when you didn't even make it yet? So obviously he's intending that it should be for the hands themselves. And therefore, that's why Nasaka Imlo Yikatru Yodech Loisem. That's why Rish Lakish explained that according to Reb Meir, it's as if that is what he's saying, that your hands should be sanctified for who made them, because since the person is not Maitid Varel Vatala, and he's saying something that's Leibel Oilam, which you cannot be Makdish, so if he's being Makdish, something must be for something that is Bel Oilam, which is for the hands of the woman themselves. Now, but the Gemara asks now on the primary halacha of Rish Lakish. Is it really true the way Rish Lakish proposed in the Meir's opinion in our Mishnah? That don't say the reason why is because you could sanctify something that didn't come to the world yet, which are Hamaisi Daim, which the husband is doing according to Reb Meir. No, it's because he could force her for Hamaisi Daim. It's as if he's saying, I'm being makdish your hands, lo yisem. And the reason why we know that is because the person not Maitzi Devar Levatal. So the Gemara asks, is that really true? That a person, according to Reb Meir, cannot be sanctifying somebody that didn't come into the world yet? But V'tanya Lin, Ha'oimele Isha, if someone tells a woman, Hare'at Mikudeshesli, which is the verse that said when a man is getting engaged to a woman, you are engaged to me, La'achar She'ezgayir, after I convert, I'm not Jewish yet. Or La'achar She'ezgayir, or after you convert, you're not Jewish yet either. Or after I get freed as a slave, which I'm not an eligible husband yet, but I'm going to get freed soon. Or after you get freed, you're still a slave, the woman, but when you get freed, then this kedushin that we're doing now will work. Or you're still married, but your husband's going to die soon, so after he dies, then this kedushin will work. Or your sister, who's my wife now, and I can't marry you because my sister-in-law, but after your sister dies, then this kedushin will work that I'm giving you now. Or after that, your yavam, your shemeres yavam now, your husband died without any children. But after your yavam does chalitza to you, then you'll be able to get married. So Meir Oimer Mekudeshes. Meir says regarding all these cases, she's Mekudeshes, and that the kedushin that he's doing now, which is shaloi bala oilam, it's not extant yet. He's not freed yet. He's not Jewish yet. She's still hers, the sister-in-law. The kedushin is not something that could be done yet. And yet still he says that he could do a kedushin of shalei b'la'ilam, which is when they finally get freed, when they finally become converted, when the husband dies, then it's going to be a kedushin. But you just said that your mayor holds that a person cannot be makdish davar shalei b'la'ilam. So that the Gemara answers, mehahi in. Rish Lakish would tell you, you're right. From that brisa, that proves or may hold a person could be makdish of davish lebelaylam. The only thing Rish Lakish was saying was mehol lekalamashmina. From our Mishnah, you cannot prove that Reb Meir's opinion is coming based on the principle of being makdish davish lebelaylam, because I could give you an explanation that he could still hold that ain't makdish davish lebelaylam, and it would be based on only the principle of being able to force her. And then, because a person doesn't say his words in vain, must be that he's being makdish her yadayim. But you're right, from that price, so we could prove that that's what he ultimately holds. Now, but one thing we see is that there is inherent in that discussion of Rish Lakish's original explanation of Reb Meir and Mishnah, you see that he argues on the principle of Rav Huna, who Rav Huna says a woman could say, "Ein in a zenis ve'ein a oisa," whereas according to Rish Lakish, you see that he holds that no, a man could force his wife to give her ma'aseh daim to him, and she cannot opt out of this takan d'rabbanan of him giving her mezainis and her giving him her ma'aseh daim. Now, the Mishnah said, as we quoted before, Hamais, regarding the excess, Remeir Oime Hekdesh. Remeir says that that will be sanctified. So, on that, the Gemara asks, Eimas Kaddish, when will the sanctification, meaning when will it be considered the property of the Beis HaMikdash, when does that happen? So, Rav Machlokes, Rav Shmuel Dami Tavaya, they both say that the Meiser is La'achar Misa, meaning after that the wife dies and he inherits her, then Kaddish, then the excess, which he was Makdish when she was still alive, is only then going to become Kaddish. Whereas Rav Adar Bar Hava Amar, he says, Meister the excess, Michayim, when she's still alive, meaning when she earns it, then Kaddish, then the excess already then becomes Kaddish. Now, the Gemara asks, Havi Bar Rapapa inquired, he wanted to understand this Machlokes of Rav Shmuel on the one hand, and Rav Bar Hava on the other hand. Bemai, What is the case talking about? Elamba b'malla mazainis, if it's talking about that he's feeding her, and moreover malla ma kesev latzarcheh, he's also giving her the additional ma of money, which is for her other needs, which are the two requirements for a husband in this regard. So my tamad demanda amar lacham isa kadosh. So what would be the understanding of Rabbi Shmuel, who said that it's only after that she dies that it's going to be kadosh, and not when she's still alive? But why? Ma'is yadayim and her meiser of the ma'is yadayim are the equivalent, and they're the counterparts of a mezainis and mokesa, which he's giving that to her. If he's giving that to her, then those become his. So the moment she makes it, it should be kadosh. So ve'ela, rather, you're going to say, kishein ma'la mezainis is talking about this halacha of Vermeer that the ma'isa becomes hekdesh, is when he's not feeding her. And v'loy ma'la mokesev lutzokher, and he's neither giving her the mokesev for her needs. But then the question is, so my time of demand amar mechaim kodesh. So what's the understanding of Rabbi Bahava that even when she's alive, it's going to be kodesh? But we explained previously on this staff that when he's not feeding her, obviously he doesn't get the counterparts. So if he's not giving her, not feeding her, and not mal kesev, so why should it be kodesh according to Rabbi Bahava even when she's still alive? But it's not his. She gets to hold on to it. It should only be when she dies, and then he inherits. Then what he had been makdish then becomes kaddish. So he doesn't understand what's the case talking about to have this machlekes Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Barhava. So Rabbi Gemara says la'olam, truthfully, it's talking about b'ma la mezainis, that he's feeding her mezainis, but ve'ena ma la mo kesef tzarchav, but he's not giving her the mo kesef for her needs. So the way the Gemara had asked it was giving both or not giving both. So the Gemara is answering that there's one that he's giving her, which is mezainis, but it's not giving her the more kesef. Now Rashi actually says that the Gemara could have just as easily said the case, talking about that he's not giving her mezainis, but he is giving her the more kesef. The only reason why I picked this way of that he is giving her mezainis, but not giving her the more kesef, is because there is Rav's opinion, which we quoted previously, that in the beginning of this Amid, that a woman could say, which was quoted from Rav in the name of Rav, that I'm not going to get fed to you and my earnings don't go to you. And hence, as the Gemara tried to bring a support for Rav Huna from our Mishnah, he interprets the Resha of the Mishnah, which says that she's when he's makdish her ma'is yadayim, that she's oisa vecheles, that she can make the earnings and she keeps it for herself. It's not kaddish. That the Gemara said that Rav Huna would learn in the name of Rav. That's even when she's being fed from him. So that's why the Gemara prefers to keep that uniformity for the sefer that it's also talking about that she's being fed. So although when she's being fed in the Reisha, she could say that, no, it's still not going to be Kaddish, the Ma'is Yadayim, which correlates to that, because Rav Huna says she could say in Oisa Ve'in in the Zenis. So that's why we're saying the Sefer is also talking about where she's being fed, but she's not getting the Mal Kesef, which is one of the Takan Chachamim for her to get. Now, so what's the Machlekes Rav Shmuel and Rav Bahava? So Rav Shmuel Sarvi, they say that according to a mayor, and the husband's being makdish moister, the excess of a ma'is yadayim, that's going to be kaddish. It's only after she dies, and then the husband inherits her. The reason being is because tiknu, they had instituted, as we continue top of the Testament Aleph, that the mezainis is tachas ma'is yadayim. The correlating of these two different obligations of husband to wife and wife to husband was that this that he provides her sustenance then obligates her to give her earnings to him. Umor kesef tachas ma'isir, and this extra money that he gives her for her other needs, thus obligates her in return to give her excess to him. Now, since we said, although he's feeding her, but since he's not giving her the mal kesef, so therefore her excess is hers, and therefore michayim, when she's still alive, he cannot be makdishit. It's just that Remeir holds that since the husband was makdishit, so he becomes obligated in it. So when she dies and then he inherits her, then it's going to be considered kaddish, but it's only after she dies when he inherits, because when she's still alive, then she gets to keep it. Because since he's not giving the mal kesef, she doesn't have to give her meiser, her excess meiser dime to him. Whereas Rav Bahava Sava, he holds that no. Tiknu mezainus tachas meiser. The sustenance that he feeds her, the primary food, that obligates her to give the excess of her earnings to the husband. And the ma of kesef that he gives her for her other needs, that then obligates her to give her primary earnings to her husband. And therefore, as we described the case, since he's giving her mezainis, so meiser did they have? So according to Rav Ad Bahava, so now in that case the excess is the husband's. So even when she's still alive, it's already going to be kaddish right away when she makes the earnings. Now we understand the machlekes Rav Shmuel and Rav Ad Bahava, but the Gemara asks, so b'mai kamifke. But what are they arguing about? Why is it that they're arguing about what correlates to what, and hence the current machlekes is regarding the meiser when he's not giving mal kesed but is giving mezainis. So the Gemara explains that Mar Sava Rav Shmuel held midi d'shchiach mi midi d'shchiach. Something that's common correlates something that's common, and sustenance is something that's common. In other words, that's something everyone needs is to get fed, and a woman's earnings is something that's common too. Now, excess of earnings that she makes so much money is not so common for a woman to have. So therefore, the mal kesef, which is also not so common, is going to be the correlate of the meiser, whereas mezainis and meisei daim, they correlate each other. But Amar Sav Rav Ad Bahava holds, midi d'koyitz mi midi d'koyitz. He makes a different comparison, and hence he comes up with a different equation. He says that we learn that something that has a set amount from something that has a set amount, and that is the mal kesef that the husband gives to the wife for her other needs, that's a set amount. Mezainis is not a set amount. Depends if she eats a lot, she eats a little bit. Now her ma'aseh dayim is also a set amount, as a later Mishnah will teach us, that it's a mishkal chomesh lom, it's a certain amount. Excess is not a set amount. She can make who knows how much money if she has she's making a large income. So therefore, ha'moiseh ma'aseh dayim, which is an excess, which is not a set amount, that will correlate to the husband's obligation of mezainis. Whereas these two elements of ma'aseh dayim and the mokesef, which are set, they correlate each other. And again, therefore, in this case, according to Rav Bahava, that since the husband is giving her mezainis, that makes her ma'aseh dayim, which is also not a set amount, obligated to the husband, and therefore he gets her ma'aseh, and that's why he interprets in Rav Meir's opinion that when he's makdash ma'aseh dayim, it becomes kaddish even now when she's alive.